ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 3 चैप्टर 3 द लॉर्ड्स पास टाइम्स आउट ऑफ वृंदावन टेक्स्ट 18। अयाजयत धर्मसुतम् अश्वमेधेः त्रिभिः विभुः सह अपि क्ष्माम् अनुजैः रक्षन् रेमे कृष्णम् अनुव्रतः। अयाजयद्धर्मसुतम् अश्वमेधैस्त्रिभिर्विभुः सोऽपि क्ष्माम् अनुजैरक्षन् रेमे कृष्णम् अनुव्रतः। अयाजयद्धर्मसुतम् अश्वमेधैस्त्रिभिर्विभुः सोऽपि क्ष्माम् अनुजैरक्षन् रेमे कृष्णम् अनुव्रतः। अयाजयद्धर्मसुतम् अश्वमेधैस्त्रिभिर्विभुः सोऽपि क्ष्माम् अनुजैरक्षन् रेमे कृष्णम् अनुव्रतः। अनुव्रतः। धर्मसुतम् अश्वमेधैस्त्रिभिर्विभुः रक्षन् कृष्णम् अनुव्रतः। मताजीस् अश्वमेधस्त्रिभिर्विभुः मामनुजै रक्षन् अयाजयत् मेड टू परफॉर्म धर्मसुतम् बाय द सन ऑफ धर्म महाराज युधिष्ठिर अश्वमेधैः बाय हॉर्स सैक्रिफाइसेस त्रिभिः थ्री विभुः द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड सह महाराज युधिष्ठिर अपि आल्सो क्ष्माम द अर्थ अनुजैः असिस्टेड बाय हिज यंगर ब्रदर्स रक्षन protecting Reme enjoyed Krishnam Krishna the personality of Godhead Anuvrataha constant follower translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada translation the Supreme Lord induced the son of Dharma to perform three horse sacrifices. And Maharaj Yudhishthir, constantly following Krishna, the personality of Godhead, protected and enjoyed the earth, assisted by his younger brothers. Purport. Maharaj Yudhishthir was the ideal monarchical representative on earth, because he was a constant follower of the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna. As stated in the Vedas, the Ishopanishad, the Lord is the proprietor of the entire manifested cosmic manifestation, creation, which presents a chance for the conditioned souls to revive their eternal relationship with the Lord, and thus go back to Godhead, back home. The whole system of the material world is arranged with that program and plan. Anyone who violates the plan is punished by the law of nature, which is acting by the direction of the Supreme Lord. Maharaj Yudhishthir was installed on the throne of the earth as a representative of the Lord. The king is always expected to be the representative of the Lord. Perfect monarchy necessitates representation of the supreme will of the Lord. And Maharaj Yudhishthir was the ideal monarch on this supreme principle. Both the king and the subjects were happy in the discharge of worldly duties, and thus protection of the citizens and enjoyment of natural life with full cooperation of material nature, followed in the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthir and his worthy descendants like Maharaj Parikshit. Please repeat the translation. The Supreme Lord induced the son of Dharma to perform three horse sacrifices, and Maharaj Yudhishthir, constantly following Krishna, the personality of Godhead, protected and enjoyed the earth, assisted by his younger brothers. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruhu Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam साद्वैतम सावधूतम परिजन सहितम कृष्ण चैतन्य देवम श्री राधा कृष्ण पादां सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदान्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामने गौरत्विषे नमः। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। सो वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग विद उद्धव्स नरेशन टू विदुरा अबाउट द पास्ट टाइम्स ऑफ द लॉर्ड प्रायर टू हिज और दिस इज अराउंड द टाइम और आफ्टर कृष्णस डिपार्चर। He has already finished the narration of the Maushala Leela in brief, the pastime in which the members of the Yadu dynasty engage in a fratricidal war and just apparently to the vision of the material world they kill each other and they leave for their respective abodes. And after the departure of Lord Krishna and the Yadus, there are certain incidents that happen in Hastinapur, which Uddhava is now describing. Krishna persuaded Yudhishthira Maharaj to perform these horse sacrifices, the Ashwamedha Yajna, and establish his dominion over the whole world. So therefore the word Ayajayat is used, which means made to perform. Yudhishthira Maharaj was induced by the Lord to perform these horse sacrifices. It is also mentioned here, Kshmam Anujai Rakshan Reme, that Yudhishthir Maharaj, he protected the earth, Kshmam, and also he enjoyed. So in what way is it possible to protect the earth? The earth is protecting us. So how does one protect the earth? And in what way did he enjoy the earth? In both ways, Yudhishthira Maharaj was very exemplary. He protected the earth because he removed those burdens from the earth that caused trouble. As we have been hearing in the previous classes, essentially the earth is fully capable of bearing any amount of good population, a virtuous population. The earth does not have any trouble not only bearing the load, the physical load or the weight of such a population, but even providing all the necessities for such a population. Krishna has created this material nature, this material world in such a way that it is complete and perfect. So therefore, Mother Earth didn't have a problem in that regard, but the problem is with miscreants, sinful people. Even one sinful person walking on the earth is a burden. Even in the Ramayana, Lord Ram says that there is no greater weight for Mother Earth than a liar, a person who lies. Just imagine, these things are so subtle. One person speaks a lie and it becomes unbearable for Mother Earth. She feels that burden very difficult to bear. So here we're not just talking of physical burdens, but we're talking of burdens of sin. And when everything is physically very heavy, good population, large population, but everyone is pious, like in the reigns of Maharaj Yudhishthira, etc., then the earth is blissful by the contact of such a population on her body. So, because Maharaj Yudhishthira was maintaining the population so nicely, according to the principles of Dharma, he was representing Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and doing Krishna's work of dharma sansthapanarthaya, of maintaining dharma, And also Vinashaya cha Dushkritam, of destroying the miscreants. He was keeping the miscreants in check. So the earth was blissful, because now she did not have to bear the burden of sinful people, of irreligious people. So the king is meant to protect the praja and also Mother Earth from the influence of such irreligious elements. And therefore, because he protected in this way, she was feeling protected. And when someone is feeling protected, naturally they feel happy. So Mother Earth was feeling very overjoyed. You know that when we are happy, we become very generous also. You know, if you're very happy, and then you may just come to the temple, give a large donation, you know, like that. You feel very, very generous when you're happy. So Mother Earth was so happy that she was bountifully supplying everything that the people required, the living entities here required. And these were meant to be enjoyed by the praja, by the residents of the earth planet. Legitimately, we see that as Mother Earth is displeased, then it becomes harder and harder to obtain the necessities of life, what to speak of the luxuries of life. In Maharaj Yudhishthira's time, not just the necessities, but even the luxuries were copiously provided by Mother Nature, all freely available, as if it was a heavenly planet, even more so than the heavenly planet. Even the residents of the higher planets would come and marvel at the situation in Maharaj Yudhishthira's reign. Just the other day, one devotee had returned from Fiji and he was describing that everything is so heavenly there, that fruits and vegetables are just growing by the wayside, you know, freely, and no one's there to take them. There's no snakes and scorpions and other disturbing elements. Anyone can just go and take any fruits, and almost like heaven. It's like heaven on earth, the Bhauma Swarga. Whereas here, we see yesterday we were at Govardhan, and there are some guava orchards, and there are these contractors all day and all night. They have to keep shouting to keep the monkeys away from the guavas and the trees. So hard, even when the earth cooperates to give some fruit and flower, it's such a struggle to just see that everything flowers and the fruits come out nicely. But in Maharaj Yudhishthira's time, everything was so naturally plentiful that everyone was very happy and they could enjoy. So that's the purport of the words, Rakshan Reme Kshmam. So Maharaj Yudhishthira protected the earth, and therefore she supplied everything, and all the residents of the earth, therefore, they enjoyed life legitimately, in a legitimate way, not exploiting the earth. When the earth is happy, there is no need to exploit. And also, because the residents, the inhabitants of the earth, are by nature very pious and virtuous, so they do not have this exploitative mentality. But when people become greedy and sinful, then they exploit each other, and they also exploit Mother Earth. Nowadays, people are very concerned about the environment and the protection of the environment. But essentially, whatever they may do, unless the heart is purified of the exploitative mentality by the process of pure devotion to the Lord, it will not be possible to protect the environment. There will always be greedy people who will try to exploit everything around them for the sake of their own selfish gains. So Maharaj Yudhishthira set the ideal example, as Srila Prabhupada mentions here, that he was the ideal monarchical representative on earth. And what is the reason for that? That is also mentioned here. Krishnam Anuvrataha. Anuvrata means, Anu means to go behind, constant. Vrata means to take a vow. So one who was always going after Krishna, always who held Krishna as all in all. Krishna was everything for them. Just like in everyday language, we say, oh, he swears by that. That means he considers that thing or that person to be so valuable that he on the name of that person, he does anything and everything. So Anuvrataha means that Yudhishthira Maharaj considered Lord Krishna as the all in all, as everything in his life, as did all the Pandavas. For them there was no life without Krishna. And they never did anything without consulting Krishna. And the kind of intense separation they felt from Krishna is something that we can only imagine. So therefore Maharaj Yudhishthir was not simply a pious king who protected the Praja. There have been many pious kings in the past also. But many of these pious kings were not necessarily great devotees of the Lord. But here we find in Yudhishthir the ideal king, because he was everything that a king should be. Ideal in every respect, even in respect of devotion to the Supreme Lord. At the instance of the Lord, Yudhishthir Maharaj performed many yajñas. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, he performed the Rajasuya Yajna. And after the battle of Kurukshetra, he performed the Ashwamedha Yajnas. Both these yajñas are somewhat similar in that they help one to become the emperor of the earth and not just a king. And to accomplish that, the emperor is expected to establish his sovereignty. He has to subjugate all other inferior kings. Now sometimes it is said that Yudhishthir Maharaj performed the Rajasuya Yajna to establish his dominion over the whole earth. But why should he, as a devotee of the Lord, have been impelled for the desire for power and dominion over everyone else? A devotee by nature is humble. He shouldn't have been in such a controlling spirit. But the answer is given in the Mahabharata that essentially Maharaj Yudhishthir was not impelled by any selfish desires. There were three principal reasons why Maharaj Yudhishthir performed these Rajasuya Yajna. The first was when Narad Muni came to visit him in Hastinapur, in Indraprastha actually, because at that time the kingdom was divided into half and Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana were in Hastinapur and Yudhishthir Maharaj, with the help of Indra and Krishna, had made this beautiful, magnificent city, Indraprastha. So Narada came to visit Yudhishthir Maharaj and described that he had met his father Pandu in the higher planets. And then Yudhishthir Maharaj was eager to hear about the assembly halls in the higher planets, and which Narad Muni described very nicely. And then he, after concluding his long descriptions, Yudhishthir Maharaj asked, "Why is it that of all the great kings you have mentioned, only King Harishchandra has actually entered the abode of King of Indra?" And then Narad Muni replied, "It's because he's the only one who did the Rajasuya Yajna. And your father Pandu wants you to do that also. So not only he, but you also can ascend to Indra's kingdom and be united again. So all the celestials, all the residents of the higher planets, the sages and the demigods, they all desire you to do this. And the second reason the celestials desire is because this is the way that the rule of virtue and piety can be established on the earth. And they want you to be the instrument of the Supreme Lord Krishna to do this. And if you do the Rajasuya Yajna, then you have to subjugate all the other kings." The demigods were very concerned that the earth planet was overrun by sinful kings, by sinful kshatriyas. And because of this demoniac influence, there was disturbance. So the residents of the higher planets wanted Maharaj Yudhishthir to be their instrument to establish the reign of virtue once again on Mother Earth. But ultimately the third reason was the most important. Yudhishthir Maharaj understood the first two reasons, but actually in his mind, in his heart, he was overjoyed contemplating the third reason. And that was that Krishna would be glorified. Because when one does a Rajasuya Yajna, one has to, in the course of the proceedings, honor the most exemplary personality or the highest, the greatest personality in that assembly. And that is called the Agra Puja. Agra means first. One worships that worthy personality first. And Yudhishthir Maharaj thought with great joy that yes, it would be most befitting if it is Krishna who is thus honored. Because at this Rajasuya Yajna, not only will all the kings on earth and all the general population here be present, but even the residents of the higher planets, the sages, the demigods, they will all be present here. And in front of them, if Krishna's supremacy, his fame, his position is declared, then that would be wonderful. So Krishna will be very suitably glorified. It is just the right occasion to do it. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was constantly contemplating on this. So this was his real motivation. To some extent, yes, he understood his duty as a king and that the rule of piety had to be established. So that was a realm of duty. But more intense than the push of duty within his heart was a push of love. And he wanted to really glorify his beloved Krishna. So that was the reason he did the Rajasuya Yajna. And likewise, after the war, this Ashwamedha Yajna was done also principally for this reason. There is a similarity between the condition of Arjuna before the battle of Kurukshetra and the condition of Yudhishthir after the battle of Kurukshetra. Arjuna was in great despair and grief when he was thinking about how he would have to kill his own relatives just for the sake of a kingdom. And he was thinking of renouncing his Kshatriya duties. Ultimately, Lord Krishna convinced him by speaking the Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, Yudhishthir Maharaj, when he saw the vast destruction that had taken place in the battle, millions of soldiers had died. I think it was 56 million. 56 million soldiers, something like that, had been killed. And especially even after he ascended the throne back in Hastinapur, and he saw the thousands and thousands of widowed ladies whose fathers, or whose husbands, whose other relatives, male relatives had been killed in the battle, he was once again overwhelmed with grief. Even though he had been pacified and consoled and instructed by great sages and even the great Bhishma himself on his deathbed, even Krishna tried. But once again, when he saw the condition in Hastinapur with all the widows and everything, he once again became overwhelmed. And then he confessed to Krishna that it's unbearable for me. Just for me ascending on the throne, we had to kill so many people. And look at these ladies, they're all widowed now. Just because of me wanting to sit on the throne. So Krishna once again consoled him that it wasn't just for that purpose. Although Yudhishthira didn't have that as the purpose. It's not that he wanted to sit there for his own selfish motive. But nevertheless, being such a pure-hearted and compassionate soul, he was feeling like this. So Krishna once again preached to him and said that, no, don't worry. What you have done is in pursuance of dharma. So now, if you grieve, your praja, your subjects will also grieve. The departed relatives will also grieve. So you must become cheerful and set the example. Do not become morose as the king. So you give ample charity to the brahmanas. Perform yajnas. Perform the Ashwamedha Yajna. And that will ensure that you become free of all sin. Whatever traces of sin are remaining will also be cleansed. So here is Krishna advising Yudhishthir Maharaj, his pure devotee and eternal associate, to perform Ashwamedha Yajna to become free of sin. We understand, of course, that the Pandavas are eternal associates of Krishna. And eternal associates are always untouched by sin. These are all different transcendental dramas that have been taking place on the earth planet to facilitate Lord Krishna's divine purposes and also to facilitate his pleasure. Therefore, Yudhishthir Maharaj, Arjun, etc. are never to be touched by sin. So why is it that Krishna is saying like this? This is because they are playing the role. From a mundane point of view, certain activities, actions have taken place, and as per the normal earthly or the worldly standard, one must atone for the sins one commits. Ultimately, Yudhishthir Maharaj doesn't really have to do that. So therefore, we find some distinction between the version of the Mahabharata, which essentially is on the platform of is for those people who are on the platform of dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is essentially for one who wants to attain Krishna prema. So the Bhagavatam therefore always gives the devotional point of view. But the Mahabharata, although essentially it is a very devotional scripture, because after all the Bhagavad Gita is part of it, because it is meant for a certain class of people, therefore it sometimes gives this point of view. So Krishna and the Pandavas are playing this role to perfection. So Krishna advises Yudhishthir Maharaj, you please perform this Ashwamedha Yajna. And also the demigods, the celestials, also desire the same thing. When Yudhishthir Maharaj presented this proposal before his council of ministers and the sages, they all accepted. And Yudhishthir Maharaj said, I do not wish to perform this Ashwamedha Yajna because I am keen on becoming the emperor. But rather, I can see that this is the will of our dear Lord Krishna. And also the celestials have ordained that this should happen. So then, Maharaj Yudhishthir got a complete green signal, a sanction from the Council of Ministers. So this is the kind of monarchy that we see happening time and again, whether in Dasharatha Maharaj's time, even when he wanted to coronate Lord Ramachandra as a crown prince, he didn't do it whimsically. He called together his ministers, he called together the leading citizens, even the Vaishyas, and then he spoke to them. This is my proposal, this is my thought, what do you think? And they all gave their hearty blessings. And then Maharaj Dasharatha, he wanted to at least coronate Lord Ram as the crown prince. Similarly, Maharaj Yudhishthir, as the ideal king, he would always consult. He would talk with his different advisors and the prominent citizens and so on. And then it was decided that the Ashwamedha Yajna should be done. The Ashwamedha Yajna involves essentially releasing a horse which will travel everywhere, and wherever the horse travels out of its own sweet will is supposed to be under the jurisdiction of the king who lets loose the horse. And anyone who stops the horse, it means that he wants to fight with the emperor. So even Ram did that. He let loose the horse, and then it was stopped by his own sons, Lav and Kush. Of course, that story you all know from the Ramayana. So here also, Yudhishthir Maharaj let loose the horse, and then his army would follow. And Arjuna followed behind, leading that army. And the Mahabharata describes all this. And Arjuna went to the various provinces like Trigartas, the son of Bhagadatta also. Finally, he reached the Sindhu province, modern-day Sindh in Pakistan, the confluence of the river Sindhu and the sea. And there, that was the kingdom of Jayadratha. And Jayadratha was married to Duryodhan's sister, Dushala. Jayadratha was, of course, dead. And when Arjun invaded and was offered challenge by the army there, then Dushala came out with her grandson, who was an infant, begging Arjuna to let everything be. And Arjuna became he was overwhelmed with compassion, and he began actually criticizing Duryodhan, that because of Duryodhan and his evil ways that the situation had come to this extent here. So anyway, then all these kings basically submitted to his influence. He also went to the land of Manipur in the far east, And there he encountered his own son, Babruvahana. Arjuna had several queens, and one of them was a princess of Manipur. Her name was Chitrangada. And when Babruvahana understood that the horse had come, and the army that was behind the horse was led by Arjuna, his own father, he came out with great joy, with many gifts, and Arjuna began to chastise him. He said, "You're a Kshatriya, and I'm come as an enemy to conquer you, and you're coming out just with some gifts? Fie upon you." You know, so the poor son was shocked like anything, and then he admonished him, "You must fight now. Be a Kshatriya, fight." It's not that Babruvahana was a coward, but just out of affection for his father, he wanted to welcome him. By prior arrangement, Babruvahana had not fought in the battle of Kurukshetra. So Arjuna then induced him to fight, and then a terrible battle ensued between father and son. And Babruvahana actually managed to shoot arrows at Arjuna, and he swooned as if dead. And then Chitrangada came running out, and Babruvahana also started weeping, seeing his father dead. And at that time, another queen of Arjuna, Ulupi, she was the daughter of the king of the serpents, the Nagas. She came there, and with a divine gem, she revived Arjuna, and all his wounds were healed. And actually, she was the one who had come and persuaded Babruvahana to agree to the duel. And then Chitrangada was telling her co-wife that because of you this happened. So Ulupi said, no, there is a whole history behind this. And then she explained that one time when the Vasus had come to bathe in the Ganges, and just at that time Bhishma had been killed by Arjuna keeping Shikhandi in front. You know that Shikhandi was a lady, and therefore Bhishma would never fight with a lady in the, so he dropped his armor, his arms, and Arjuna was able to kill him. So the Vasus were very upset about this because Bhishma was one of them who had taken birth here on earth. So they mentioned to Mother Ganga, and because Bhishma was also the son of Mother Ganga, so they said that we will now curse Arjuna to die. And then the Nagas, she heard this because she had been present there. Ulupi is the daughter of the Nagas, and she rushed to her father and said, "My dear father, this is what has happened. My husband has been cursed by the Vasus to die because he has killed Bhishma with the help of a woman, Shikhandi." So immediately the king of the Nagas, he rushed to the higher planets to pacify the Vasus. And then they relented somewhat and they said, "All right, the curse cannot be completely taken back. But when his own son destroys him, or rather defeats him in battle and subjugates him completely, then the curse will be over." So Ulupi said, "This was the whole divine arrangement, therefore that has taken place. Therefore I wanted this battle to go on so that Arjuna wouldn't die." And then Arjuna was reunited with his family. But he didn't even stay there one night. The ways of the Kshatriyas are difficult for us to imagine. We just think of the Kshatriyas of the Vedic times as being living in, you know, big opulent palaces, having so much wealth and enjoyment and pleasures and so on. But one statement of Draupadi from the Mahabharata will indicate what it meant to be a Kshatriya. She said, "There is no suffering greater in the world than to be a Kshatriya." He said, "It's so nice for the Brahmanas. They're just happy chanting their mantras and being in their homes and taking charity from us. And they have nothing, no lack of anything. And they're peaceful. They never get killed in the battle. But we Kshatriyas, we have to bear the torture of seeing our beloved ones killed in large numbers. Just imagine, we just read as figures in two or three verses in the Bhagavatam or Mahabharata, we read, so many million soldiers killed, he chopped his head off, and this happened and that happened, rivers of blood were flowing, mountains of bodies were lying there. But what does it mean for the near and dear ones? What does it mean for the whole kingdom to have people in millions slaughtered at every battle like this? Terrible suffering. And the Kshatriyas, because they have that sense of pride, they need a kingdom. And now they have to, everything is taken away. You know, for a Kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. The Pandavas' queen was publicly disrobed, attempted to be disrobed. What torture! So therefore, even for Arjuna, he could never enjoy his family life, really speaking. So here he was reunited with his son and his two queens, but he could not stay there even a moment longer, because he had his duty to fulfill towards Maharaj Yudhishthir, the emperor. So having established Manipur also as part of the kingdom, he went away to other lands. Eventually he came back. So Maharaj Yudhishthir welcomed Arjuna very nicely. And then he was in some anxiety because there wasn't sufficient wealth. Now this is also described in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 12th chapter. Prabhupada gives a very long and nice purport on this part, which I will describe. He says that Maharaj Yudhishthir became anxious because there was only enough funds to just manage the kingdom. These funds were coming from the taxes and the fines. But there wasn't enough extra wealth to perform the Ashwamedha Yajna. Performing an Ashwamedha Yajna requires a huge amount of wealth. And after the battle of Kurukshetra, the treasury had been considerably depleted. So then Yudhishthir Maharaj consulted Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva revealed a secret. He says there is a cave in the Himalayas where there is a huge amount of gold, unimaginable amount of gold there. And then he recounted the history. Long years ago there was a king called King Marutta, who was a son of King Avikshit. He was a very, very great and pious emperor. And he was extremely wealthy because of the sacrifices he had performed. He was very, very powerful. And he pleased, of course in the Mahabharata it says he pleased Lord Shiva. Elsewhere Srila Prabhupada mentions the purport that he was also a worshipper of Yamaraj, the son of the sun god. And anyway, because he performed a certain yajna called Sankara Yajna, so he was awarded a mountain of gold. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport that this mountain of gold is still there in the Himalayas, and modern day adventurers may try to find it. So it's there. Modern history in the last few hundred years has known many gold rushes. There have been the gold rush. People, whenever they know there's some gold somewhere, they rush. So Prabhupada says this will be the real gold rush if they know there's a mountain of gold in the Himalayas. And then Prabhupada says in the purport that King Marutta fashioned many, many articles from this mountain of gold. He took gold from there. Even the altars and the canopies were made of solid gold. All the plates, all the utensils, everything was solid, pure gold. And still there was a mountain left. So there was no shortage. And all the charity he gave to the millions of brahmanas who came was also solid gold. And he gave so much to each brahmana, Prabhupada explains, that they couldn't carry it all. So they said, what do we need all this for? So they just took a little bit and dumped the rest in the Himalayas in the forest. And there to this day it all lies. I mean, Vyasadeva was telling Maharaj Yudhishthir. And Krishna also said, yes, this is right, because wealth that has not been claimed by anyone is anyway the property of the king. Actually, all the property is the property of the king. Even though the Vaishyas may say it's ours, but actually, by the laws of Manu, everything belongs to the king, because he's a representative of God, and God is the ultimate proprietor. So Krishna reasoned with his infallible logic that now it's just lying there and you're the emperor. So go and take it and use it for your purposes of establishing dharma everywhere. So then Yudhishthira Maharaj sent Arjuna. And when Arjuna went, he returned with a seemingly endless lines of bullock carts and elephants filled to the brim with gold, solid gold everywhere. Prabhupada mentions also that it is interesting to note that the gold remained there without being stolen for such a long time. Because the people were completely satisfied. They didn't need to steal. They had enough of everything themselves. So why would they take the trouble of going and stealing somebody else's gold? Even the Brahmanas, who were supposed to be the poorest, they threw away that gold. It was rejected even by the poorest of them in that society. And Prabhupada explains that in the modern day of insufficiency, we can't even dream of doing something that Maharaj Yudhishthira did in his days of complete sufficiency. So therefore, nowadays, of course, it is not possible for us to do that. And Prabhupada goes on to say that now, all we have are little slips of paper, green paper, which only are promises. I promise to deliver the sum of so and so, dollars or rupees or pounds or whatever, to the bearer of this letter. And it's supposed to be backed by a reserve of gold in the central bank of any country. But everyone knows, it's an open secret, that the amount of currency that is printed is many, many times greater than the reserve of gold that is there. So it's all a big hoax. There isn't enough gold in the reservoirs of the central banks of the countries to back up that currency that is circulating. It's simply a slip of paper, that's all. It has no value. Prabhupada one time said that in the Second World War in Germany, people would come with bags of suitcases of currency notes to buy a loaf of bread, and people would steal the bag but not the currency. They would dump the currency and take away the suitcase when they're stealing, because the suitcase was more valuable than the currency notes there. So this is the artificial economy. But in Maharaj Yudhishthira's time, everything was based on gold and other such valuable commodities, and there was a system of barter, a system of charity, by which everyone was satisfied. So Yudhishthira Maharaj completed the Ashwamedha Yajna. Krishna was present there very much, and the rule of dharma was once again established everywhere. Of course, the Ashwamedha Yajna also involved sacrificing a horse. Ashwa means horse. But the sacrifice of animals in those days, in the Vedic times, did not involve simply killing. It is not to be considered killing, because these animals were given a fresh lease of youthful life. They were even promoted to the human form of life. So it was actually a blessing for these animals. And it depended on the performance of the proper rituals, with the proper pronunciation, the proper mantras, and so on. So in this way, the Ashwamedha Yajna is not to be performed in the modern days. There is a verse which has been quoted by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ashwamedha gavalambham sanyasam palapaitrikam devarona sutotpattim kalo pancha vivarjayet. That there are five things, pancha, that in Kalo, in Kali Yuga, vivarjayet, are forbidden. One is Ashwamedham, Ashwamedha Yajna. Second is Gavalambham, Gava Alambham. Gava means cow. The sacrificing of a cow, it means it was done earlier, and the cow was restored to a fresh lease of life. The third is Sannyasam, taking of sannyas. But the Vaishnava Acharyas and even the others from the Mayavadi Sampradayas, they take sannyas for the sake of preaching. Fourth is Palapaitrikam, to offer flesh and meat as oblations or as offerings to the forefathers, the Shraddha ceremony. And finally, there is Devarena Sutotpattim. Devar means the brother of the husband. So a lady should not beget offspring through the husband of the brother, the Devar. That is also forbidden. So these five things are forbidden. And Srila Prabhupada explains, therefore, that there is no question of us doing this kind of sacrifice in this age. Now also Krishna is here. Just as Krishna instructed Yudhishthira Maharaj to perform the Ashwamedha Yajna, Krishna and his great representatives are also instructing us to perform the Yajna that is just suitable for this age. And that is the Sankirtana Yajna. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam it is said that Kalo Dosha Nidhe Rajan Astihi Eka Mahan Guna Kirtanad eva Krishnasya mukta sangaha param vrajet. That this Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, and therefore one cannot perform all these other big sacrifices. But there is one great quality, astihi ek mahan guna, and that is Kirtanad eva Krishnasya, the Kirtana, Sankirtan of Lord Krishna's holy names. Mukta sangaha param vrajet. One will become free from material attachment and one will go back, param, to the supreme destination, the spiritual world. So if we chant the holy names of the Lord in this age, all purposes will be accomplished. The rule of dharma will be established on the earth. All the people will become happy like they were in Maharaj Yudhishthira's times. Mother Earth will become so pleased, she will supply everything bountifully. There will be no scarcity for anything. And then all the people will be very happy, and the perfect reign of virtue and happiness will be established simply by chanting the holy names of Lord Krishna. So thank you very much. We will stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Madhav Maharaj is here. Any comments, Maharaj, please? The mic, please. Today was only Mahabharata storytelling. But anyway, that is the verse today. So.
Wow. He did three ashwamedhas. So he did one before when they were in Indraprastha, right? And Duryodhan and the whole crew, all the Kauravas assisted. And he did one after the battle of Kurukshetra, right? Now, I understand how he did two, but when did he do the third one?
Actually, what he did before the battle was not the Ashwamedha Yajna, that was the Rajasuya Yajna. Yeah, so that was different. There's some differences there in the type of Yajna that is done. And the Ashwamedha Yajna was the one we are reading about here. Now, in this verse, the word Tribhihi is mentioned. Tribhir means three. And in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam also it is mentioned that he did it three times. In the Mahabharata it is said that Vyasadev instructed Yudhishthira Maharaj to give three times what is normally given in the Ashwamedha Yajna so that it would count as three Ashwamedha Yajnas. So that's three. So three times as much as is normally expected to be given. So he got the credit of doing three Ashwamedha Yajnas. So therefore the word Tribhi is used here and also in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Yes, can the mic please be passed there?
The five things prohibited in Kali Yuga.
Hare Krishna.
The five things prohibited?
In Kali Yuga.
Ashwamedha, horse sacrifice. Gavalambha, cow sacrifice. Sannyas, of course, now as I mentioned, for the sake of preaching, it is required. Fourth is offering of flesh to the forefathers in Shraddha. Fifth is for a lady to marry the brother of her husband, or for a man to marry the wife of his brother. Devara. These are the five things.
Yes, Mataji. Thank you.
There. Can you please pass the mic there? That's it.
Hello, sorry. You say that 56 million people were killed and then there was a movement back to perfect happiness. So you are reading the scriptures as justifying war, and yet there is a strong tradition of ahimsa. I wonder if you could explain this tension and how you would apply it to life today in the world, and to Iraq, and conflicts that are taking place today. Because you seem to be suggesting that war is a righteous means of getting rid of problems.
Not always, but sometimes. And that is entirely why the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Ahimsa is true, it is right. It is a principle that is very dear to civilized people. But nevertheless, there are times when it is violent, to be non-violent. Non-violence in terms of physical inactivity is not always a good principle. For example, if we are walking with a companion on the street and somebody attacks our companion, then should we resort to non-violence? There should be violence. Or let's say some miscreants come here and try to attack the temple or do something, then should the devotees keep quiet? They should adopt the path of violence in a regulated, restricted way. So, non-violence from the physical point of view is not an absolute principle. It is a principle that is to be applied in general situations. But when the laws of religion demand violence, then violence is good. It is necessary for the larger good. That is, in fact, the purpose of there being a class of warriors or kshatriyas or administrators. The principal duty, one place Prabhupada mentions in the purport, the principal duty of a kshatriya king is to punish the wrongdoers. So if the wrongdoers are not punished, there will be chaos. We cannot have peace on earth if the wrongdoers are not suitably punished. Arjuna wanted to give up his duty as a kshatriya to fight a righteous war. The Kauravas had unjustly taken away their kingdom and were not willing to give them even as much land as could fit on the head of a pin. And this was duly sanctioned by the Supreme Lord Krishna himself. So when God advises somebody to do something violent, then that is the ultimate non-violence. So that is for the larger good. Because if we do not perform violence or apparent violence at that time, then it will cause greater harm to the whole world. Therefore, violence, according to the laws of dharma, is necessary sometimes, and that is why we have a class of people who are called the kshatriyas, who are meant to protect. Kshatrayate iti kshatriyah. So ones who protect the praja from unscrupulous, unlawful elements, they have to resort to violence sometimes. Yes, Yadavachari Prabhu, can we have the mic, please? So does that answer your question? Thank you.
In response to your question, Mataji, Anna, you're asking in relationship to violence. In our experience in this last century, we saw the results of invasion and suppression by Adolf Hitler, who would knowingly and willingly subjugate the world and kill everyone that didn't agree or wasn't part of his human superior race. So therefore the world had to take up arms to defeat such a violent person and demon as he was. And that was a just cause, it was a just fight. In the case of a situation where the United States was fighting in Vietnam, which is totally inappropriate, there was no justification, so it was not the right cause. In the case of what we have in Iraq, Iraq itself is again the same situation as in Vietnam. It had no real bona fide spiritual justification, or nor was the world at risk. It was just simply a case of Mr. Bush wanting to be able to get back at Saddam Hussein, who tried to kill his father. And in other words, it's a good old boys' war. It has nothing to do with spiritual justification and reality. So therefore, the real source, Prabhupada spoke to me very clearly about the use of violence. You use violence according to that which is being pushed against you. If somebody comes to attack you, if somebody comes to rape your wife or to steal your goods, there's a justification for being able to use violence accordingly. But again, what we see in today's world, unfortunately, is inappropriate. Just as well as the terrorists who justify bombing innocent people in the name of Allah, in the name of God. This is not spiritual justified. So therefore, actually, in this age of Kali Yuga, there is no such thing as a justified spiritual war. But during the time of the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, for the purpose that during the battle of Kurukshetra, there was just cause under just circumstances that allowed this to happen, to be able to install or to allow a just king to be able to rule. But again, in our society, we don't see that example.
Thank you very much, Yadavacharya Prabhu, for your eloquent explanation. Yeah, one question here, last question.
Why it has been forbidden to become in Kali Yuga, actually?
Why is sannyas also forbidden in Kali Yuga? As I mentioned, for the sake of preaching, it's required. All the great acharyas have themselves taken sannyas, and they have also induced their followers to do so. But essentially, because people are unqualified in this age, in general, in Kali Yuga, people are not pure. It requires a lot of purity and freedom from sense desire to be able to be a real sannyasi. So in this age, it is very difficult. It's a very impure age. The atmosphere is polluted. Mentalities are polluted. Therefore, such a restriction. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.